down, depending on a lot of things, perhaps. It'll be down a ways, more or less, but it'll be down. Let's say now the glass is half full. How do you account for this? This is what you can see with the naked eye. You can see that the water has gone down in the glass since you last looked at it last Friday. Now you don't understand this. How do you explain it? Well, in general, men have imagined two sets of possible circumstances to account for this sort of thing, for evaporation, what we call evaporation. Nothing is more common than evaporation. We all know about evaporation. But you don't understand it, do you? Do you? I'll tell you one way that I was told when I was a small boy by my mother. This is how new the world is, or how old our ideas are, or something. She told me that when she was a little girl in Sweden, they would put out milk by the lake at certain times for the brownies. They really did. They put out milk for the brownies. And then they would go back the next morning, and the milk would be gone. And of course, the brownies would come and drink it. That's one kind of explanation. The brownies drank it. What's the matter with that? Anything especially wrong with that explanation? What is wrong with it? I love the story that I repeated in People in Quandaries about the Plazas and then pencils, and two mysteries. Anybody wanted to find a pencil, they couldn't find one. And then he did somehow find one and went to the sharpener. The sharpener was always full of shavings. How to account for these mysteries? And the emperor appointed the committee. The wise philosophers who worked so long and so hard and finally came up with a wonderful theory that accounted for both mysteries. There were little people down under the earth called Ploglies, and they come at night when you aren't there, and they find all the pencils. And they take them to the pencil sharpener. They grind them all up. And then they go back into the earth. Counts for both mysteries. The only trouble is there aren't any Ploglies. Well, how do you know there aren't any Ploglies? Well, now we can get back to the evaporation. Here's the water glass. It's like that, you see. Maybe the brownies drank it. Maybe the Ploglies came and drank it. Or the Gilligs. The Gilligs may have done it. There's another theory. Of course, it's fantastic. It's just fantastic. But it's to this effect that the water is actually made up of little tiny bits. You know, this stuff that runs and pours and gets you wet. That's really made up of little particles. Well, oh, they're awfully tiny, of course. You can't possibly ever see them. This is a very, very important part of this theory. You can't ever see them. Now, if you overlook this, you're going to misunderstand quite completely. You'll never see them. They're that tiny. Now then, you've imagined these little tiny particles. Now there's no end to what you can imagine about them. Well, for instance, they're electrically charged. Imagine that. That doesn't sound like, well, after all we're imagining, it's gone. They're electrically charged. And they move around. They're restless as they can be. Ooh, they just zip. Zip, 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 zip. All of them zipping all at once. And, of course, some of them go so fast that they go right on out of the glass. But most of them don't, because they have these electrical charges and they sort of attract each other. So while they go very fast, they kind of go toward each other most of the time. It's only when they get off toward the edge of the circuit and are going so fast that they zip right out of the glass. And this happens often enough that since last Friday, half the little pieces of water got out. Can you believe that? Can you possibly believe that? That's the molecular theory of matter. That's how we explain to each other what we don't understand about evaporation. In general, there are these two kinds of series: Plotlins and Brownies and Gremlins and all kinds of little people. You remember, and then these more impersonal kinds of theories about little pieces of things. Or wave motions, you know. You want to read something that really is... you talk about Gertrude's Time being difficult to read, or E.E. Cummings. Well, you read some of the articles in the technical physical journals about the controversy regarding whether there are little particles, or the matter is made up of little particles, or of some kind of just wave motion. And you'll think Gertrude Stein is talking the clearest English you've ever read. Maybe, unless you have studied enough physics, then it can be very clear, of course. And that means if you have studied enough of this kind of language, you get after a while so you can talk it. And you ought to go sometime to some place like the Bureau of Standards. I went last summer to one of the stations of the Bureau of Standards and took the tour. And some young PhD was trying to tell us about some waves that he was studying that come from outer space. And all I did was to ask a few very simple questions that I think any second grader would have asked if he'd been alert. And the poor fellow was just dumb. He'd been talking this language so long that he didn't really know what he was talking about, except the words he was using. And all I was asking is, well, what are the operations you perform? What is it you observe? What's the apparatus? What does it do? Where is it? What is the record you get? Well, he got a jiggly line on something, long as strip of paper. And I was just asking, well, what do the jiggly lines mean? He hadn't talked about jiggly lines for months. He had been talking about waves, various kinds, and other things that I can't remember. But you see, if you talk this language long enough, it comes as easy to you as Chinese or French. It's about as hard to translate back into English. Now, we have then these two kinds of theories. You remember the little story I just got about time to remind you? I think it's perhaps helpful to be reminded of some of these things that you may have read rather fast. And perhaps with a certain air of wondering what the point was. Remember the story about Einstein's man who is trying to understand what goes on inside the watch, but he can't open the case? This is like a man trying to understand nature, you know. Think of yourself trying to understand what you mean by a person. You're like Einstein's man who's trying to understand the watch, and he can't open the case. He can see the hands moving. He can hear the ticking. And as Einstein says, if he is sufficiently if he is sufficiently ingenious, he may be able to make a picture inside his head of what there might be inside the watch that makes the hands move and that makes the ticking. But he will never know, and it would never even occur to him to think that it would be meaningful to ask what there is really inside the watch. This is the part of that story that you may have missed. it will never occur to him that anyone could ever know what there might be inside the wallet. You'll never know. You'll never know whether there really are gillies. You'll never know whether there really are electrons. And it doesn't matter. And this is terribly difficult to understand. Because we have been, ever since we were babies, we have been taught that there is somewhere a truth that you can discover. And now from all this we learn there isn't. But there is no end to what you can imagine the truth might be. But you will never know whether there really are gillies. But after you understand this well enough, you won't really want to know anymore. It won't make any difference to you. It won't mean anything to you. You really will think it sort of quaint that anyone would wonder. And so it doesn't bother you. Not at all. In fact, it's much more exciting the other way. Because now you see there is no limit to what you can imagine. There are no frontiers here that will ever be closed. Always expanding. And that's, of course, basically the reason why. Since this has come to be realized by a few people, we have had such tremendous development in all those fields that are affected by the work that is done by these imaginative persons whom we call nuclear physicists and so on. We live with their imaginings. I'll see you Monday.
This has been a lecture in the classroom series General Semantics. The speaker was Wendell Johnson, professor of speech pathology and psychology at the State University of Iowa. A reading list and an outline for this course may be obtained by writing to Professor Wendell Johnson, radio station WSUI in Iowa City. This classroom broadcast is heard each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 8:30 over WSUI in Iowa City.